Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, October 29th, 2021. Today, as we do every week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me with his reporting and editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So Frankfurt Book Fair organizers have published final attendance numbers for the show, which ended last weekend. Your own PW colleague Ed Nowotka likewise reported a comprehensive look back at the 2021 fair. And we knew Frankfurt would not return to its old self entirely, but just how scaled down was this year's event?
Well, it was very scaled down. You know, as you know, over the weekend, we got the final numbers. After a year's hiatus because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the number of participants for the in-person Frankfurt Book Fair was just as we expected, significantly smaller than in previous years. So overall, the 2021 fair counted 36,000 trade visitors. Those are publishers like you and me when we go to the fair, and the 37,500 private visitors. By comparison, the fair had total attendance, this includes the public and the private visitors, of 302,000 at its last pre-COVID fair. That was in 2019. So attendance stands at roughly a quarter of its usual attendance. Just over 2,000 companies took part, either physically or virtually. That was compared to 7,400, more 7,450, I believe, in a normal year. And the Wright Center, the Lit Ag, saw the number of exhibitors or tables go down significantly too. For comparison, we should note that in 2019, there were 7,500 exhibitors in the Lit Ag, which of course, you know, is the beating heart of the fair, because remember, Frankfurt's DNA is as a rights fair. That was, you know, at about 25% capacity too this year. This after setting records year after year for tables sold. They have to expand the Lit Ag constantly year after year. But you mentioned Ed's piece, and I thought that piece was really great because, you know, we're still in the middle of this pandemic, right? Well, maybe not at the middle, but we're still not in the place where we want to be. And the attendance numbers do tell a story in Frankfurt, but I don't think they tell the story. And in his piece, I think Ed hits at what the story is, which is, first and foremost, we had a Frankfurt Book Fair. That really is progress. That is fantastic news. You know, it's a point that I made last week, and I'll congratulate Jürgen Bose and his staff again for pulling off an in-person Frankfurt Book Fair. But more, I think, you know, our professional lives, like so many other industries, well, they've been forever changed, right? I mean, things have to change. You know, we have to take this moment in history where we've all been forced to change things that we do, virtually everything that we do in some cases, and we have to figure out what works going forward, what we need, what we want, and equally important, what we don't need. And I'll say this about Frankfurt. They are not, as an institution, afraid to ask tough questions, either of themselves or of the industry. And in Ed's piece, Jürgen notes that prior to 2020, people may have taken the Frankfurt Book Fair a bit for granted. And this year was a reminder of, you know, just how important the Frankfurt Book Fair still is to our industry, how important it is to still come together and meet face to face, these chance meetings and serendipitous discussions that we have in the hallways, just how important they are to our industry. And all of that is true. I just want to add one thing to that, and that's that a lot of people did not know what they were missing by not going to a Frankfurt Book Fair because they've never had the opportunity to go. So my final word on all of this for Frankfurt for 2021 is this. You know, first, obviously, we need to get this virus under control. But after we do that and we start thinking about what we're going to look like going forward, we need to do the work of building back. There's a lot going for the industry, especially in terms of sales. And then 2022 and beyond, you know, I just don't think it's going to be enough to say that, you know, yeah, you missed the fair when it wasn't here. So come back now. I think the message has to be that the fair is more important than ever, right? That more people can participate in more ways than ever, and that it's an important institution because you need us in person, online, whatever it is. I think the future is wide open. I think we still need fairs like Frankfurt. I think Frankfurt still does serve a role. So let's think about charting a new course post-pandemic. Anyway, that's my two cents, my pep talk. And by all means, go read Ed's piece. I think it's a really excellent recap of this first comeback Frankfurt Book Fair.
So when it comes to Frankfurt Book Fair then, Andrew, I guess it's build back better.
There's a lot of that going on these days, right?
It does seem that way. Analysts at NPD BookScan weighed in this week with their expectations for book sales for the end of this year and looking ahead as well to 2022. In brief, the outlook is mixed.
Yeah, so the good news is that book sales are expected to finish 2021 on a good note, said Krista McLean. She's the executive director and industry analyst for books at NPD BookScan. She said this during a webinar late last week on third quarter sales. And, you know, with Halloween upon us, that's good news because I don't want to alarm anyone here, but I went into a department store this week and all the Christmas decorations were out. I'm not kidding. It gets earlier and earlier every year, or so it seems. And especially this year, as we discussed 2 years ago, with supply chain issues, I feel like it's even, you know, people are starting to shop earlier. And especially this year, as we discussed 2 weeks ago, with supply chain issues. You know, in the fourth quarter of 2020, Krista McLean noted, consumers started their holiday shopping early. And given the continued reports of supply chain problems, she's confident they're going to do so again this year in 2021. And that should boost sales since consumers usually spend more when they start early. Makes sense, right? And while the supply chain issues, I think, are a cause for concern for many publishers and many people in the industry, McLean says she doesn't believe it's going to really affect consumers too much, that most consumers, if they go into a bookstore or want to buy a book for somebody, even if the book they want isn't going to be available to ship by Christmas, they're going to pick an alternative. And I think she's probably right. And I think it's going to be a good year for giving gift cards and gift certificates for bookstores. And many booksellers, frankly, agree. And I agree, frankly, that booksellers are probably going to benefit from continued strong backlist sales. They performed very well over the last year. Anyway, McLean believes that there's enough momentum heading into the holidays to allow the industry to finish 2021 on a good note with sales increases of between 5% and 9% above 2020, with the most likely scenario being a 6 to 9% increase. And I just want to make a point again here that that increase is on top of a terrific 2020 in which sales were up 12%. And to put things in perspective, that would mean that the industry has stuffed what would normally be probably like a decade's worth of growth into the last 2 years, which is outstanding. So, you know, look at it this way. Sales of print books dipped in the latest quarter that ended October 2nd compared to 2020, where the numbers were very good. But for the first 9 months of the year, they're still up by 90 million units over 2019. So that's really good news.
All right. But I know where this is going, Mr. Grinch. What's the not so good news?
Well, not so good news is McLean pointed that the trends do in fact point to a softer 2022. And none of us should be surprised by that, right? But I guess the question is, what does that mean? If we have a down year in 2022, does that mean modest growth as opposed to the meteoric growth that we've been seeing, or worse? Are we going to see some contraction? Well, suffice it to say, there are indeed headwinds on the horizon for 2022. And McLean on the webinar warned us all, and I'll quote her here, to gird our loins and be prepared for some negative numbers. Now, specifically, she noted that a number of factors could mean softer sales in early 2022. And that includes what we talked about recently on this show was the ongoing supply chain issues. And she expressed concern that if too many titles are delayed and supply chain problems continue into the new year, which is likely to happen, publishers say, that publishers are going to be faced with excess inventory. The stores are going to have a hard time finding room for. And we know what happens when stores have too much inventory. They start sending it back. And then again, there's a question of changes in consumer buying habits, right? As, you know, as the pandemic eases and maybe as we start to see some weaker consumer confidence, I don't know if that's the case yet, certainly possible in, as we come out of this pandemic. And of course, you know, there's going to be really difficult comparisons to the previous year, right? Because we had a really strong year in 2020, especially end of the last quarters of 2020. It's going to be hard to match those in 2021 and then match them again in 2022. But look, if it's softer sales off a significantly higher level than we were at, say, in 2019, well, who can complain about that, right? And again, I'll point out that the industry through the first 9 months of the year is 90 million units ahead of where they were in 2019 before the pandemic sort of changed everything. And then look, you know, on the PW site this week, there's two stories that I point out. One is about Bloomsbury, which has now reported record results for the six-month period that ended August 31st, 2021. And the numbers are truly impressive. Their total sales rose by 29% over 2020, and profits increased 225%. That is an astounding number. Now, there were a couple of acquisitions by Bloomsbury in there, but the company mostly attributed its gains to increases in organic sales and to higher sales of digital materials. So if we can continue on that trajectory, even if it's not at the same rate, we're going to be okay. Meanwhile, Hachette also this week reported a 9% dip for the quarter over 2020. That would be the third quarter. But that still leaves them up about 9% for the year so far. Again, over 2020, that was a gangbuster year for them. So, you know, I think watching Bloomsbury, that house to me, I think is going to be especially instructive. And here's why. You know, the publisher has said that, you know, it has so far implemented strategies to successfully mitigate the issues it's seeing in the supply chain. But it conceded that because of these supply chain issues, most of their accounts have placed bigger orders earlier than usual to hedge against disruptions. And that has really helped lift sales in the most recent quarters. So we might expect with the people who are ordering earlier that they're going to order less stock going forward. So we may see smaller sales in that way. And then Bloomsbury officials warned that if those large orders don't sell through, you know, I just sort of hinted at that before, they could see larger returns in 2022, which nobody wants to see. So heady times for publishers, strong sales, you know, pretty positive outlook, but also very complicated times as well.
And any optimism about book sales, Andrew, is of course directly proportional to having great books to buy and read. Which brings me to PW's best books issue that came out the end of last week.
Yeah, one of the biggest and best and always our most popular feature of the year, best books. And you know, again, I want to call out the work of our reviews team, which, as they always do, did a ton of work this year to cull some 9,000 reviews that we do a year here at Publishers Weekly down to what ends up being their 150 top picks for best books of the year, which includes a top 10 list, which includes a mix of fiction and nonfiction, all great stuff. Among those top 10 picks is Little Devil in America by Hanif Abdurraqib, who graces the cover of Publishers Weekly, the magazine, the print issue, and that our reviews team called, and I'll quote them here, a vivacious and soul-invigorating appreciation of the history of Black performance in this country. Now, we could be here for the rest of the day. I won't go over the whole 150 book list here. I'm just going to point you to the piece and remind you gently that it's not too early to start your holiday shopping, especially given all the supply chain issues we've talked about. And you can put together your own wish list for reading while you're there too, because really there's no better resource than PW's best books list. There's also a list I should point out for the 50 top works for children and teens. And you can't go wrong. You know, these are two amazing lists. And, you know, we talk about business a lot on the show and the numbers. And of course, you know, that's a proper measure of the industry. But the best books list every year to me is a reminder really of what we do and what really matters. And that, of course, is literature, the power of literature, which this list, as always, truly celebrates. So in that sense, it's always the holiday season in the book business. There's always great books on the shelves.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me on the program.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, as Capitol Hill considers a multi-trillion-dollar infrastructure investment proposal from the Biden White House, Republicans and Democrats are arguing over more than the cost. What we mean by infrastructure has become a critical question. Victor Picard co-directs the Media Inequality and Change Center at the Annenberg School at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. In an op-ed this summer for the Columbia Journalism Review, Picard and Annenberg colleague Timothy Neff called for creation of a public media safety net that would deliver trustworthy information and access to democracy.
We have glaring market failure where local journalism is not being supported and the information and news that we need as a democratic society is not being provided for. So really, you know, that should be seen as a national crisis. And yet there's been very little policy response thus far. And even for those folks who might be very hesitant to look to government or look to some sort of public support for their news media, even for those folks where they might be ideologically predisposed against that idea, I think that the evidence is mounting that there simply is no commercial future for many kinds of journalism, especially local journalism. And so that's a long-winded way of saying why we need to find public means of support, or at least non-market means of support.
Rebuilding and rethinking U.S. information infrastructure. Coming up on the next podcast from CCC. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us, please, on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.